That night, my imagination was, in a certain sense, baptized. The rest of me, not unnaturally, took longer. I had not the faintest notion what I had let myself in for by buying Fantasties. This is Pints with Jack, Season 7, Episode 32, McDonald Month. His story, After Hours with Joyce McPherson. Welcome everyone. Here on Pints with Jack, we're reading our way to the works of C.S. Lewis, but today we're having one of our themed months. Lewis regarded George MacDonald as his master, and was constantly encouraging his friends and correspondents to read him. We did a one-off episode last season with Dr. Kirsten Jeffrey Johnson, but today is the long-promised and long-overdue MacDonald Month. And we're going to start this series by looking at his life with the help of Joyce McPherson. Joyce McPherson teaches English at Covenant College and has written biographies for young people, including biographies of Blaise Pascal, Isaac Newton, Ulbricht Dürer, C.S. Lewis, Johann Sebastian Bach, and George MacDonald. She is the author of some light fantasy for children, as well as abridged Shakespeare plays for youth theatre. She is a mother of 9 children. In her spare time, she enjoys reading history and directing Shakespeare plays. And rather crucially, for this month, she is the author of Spiritual Sight, The Story of George MacDonald. Joyce, welcome to Pints with Jack.
I'm glad to join you. I've listened to your podcast, and I am a huge fan of C.S. Lewis.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for kicking off MacDonald Month. As I told you before I hit record, this is a long overdue debt. I claim to be a fan of C.S. Lewis, and yet I have devoted next to no time on the guy that he kept pointing everybody towards.
I'm glad you're hosting him today.
Well, today I'm enjoying a nice cup of tea because this episode is basically going to be story time as we hear MacDonald's rather incredible life story. Are you drinking anything?
Yes, I have a nice large mug of tea.
Perfect. Cheers.
Cheers.
So would you mind just telling us a little bit more about yourself and particularly how you got into writing biographies?
Yes, I started writing biographies when my children were young, and they're all grown up now. But I wanted them to know that some of the most brilliant and creative people in history believed in God and trusted in his son. My stories are based on the facts of the person's life, but you might call it historical fiction in the sense that I show rather than tell such ideas as the type of home life they had or their influences in coming to faith. However, even these details are based on anecdotes from letters and material written by the subject or his family. In some ways, I feel like I'm a translator of scholarly research into stories that will communicate deep truths to children. Like in my story of Blaise Pascal, I was able to weave in many of his important ideas into the story.
This was the first of your books that I had read, and I really, really liked it. It was really quite delightful, the tone of how you learn about someone's life, because I knew relatively little about MacDonald. The only things I knew were the things that C.S. Lewis knew from the one biography he read from his son, and the details which Lewis then included in the anthology for George MacDonald. So it was a really lovely way to get to know him. It felt much more personal.
Yes.
How did you get into MacDonald?
Well, there's something special about writing MacDonald's story this year because he would have been 200 years old. But more than this, several years ago, I wrote a biography on C.S. Lewis and learned that George MacDonald had a powerful impact on his life. Lewis wrote that in MacDonald, he found a goodness or holiness that left him yearning for more. Lewis wrote, "I know hardly any other writer who seems to be closer or more continually close to the spirit of Christ himself." He also made an anthology, which you mentioned, of his favorite MacDonald quotes and explained in the foreword that I fancy I've never written a book in which I did not quote from him. I wanted to understand what he meant, so I started reading George MacDonald's novels, fantasies, and sermons, and it was true. For example, there were themes of what we cannot see being more true than what we can see. Or true nobility being from character rather than worldly position. And here are a couple quotes from George MacDonald that all those who love C.S. Lewis will appreciate. First, from his novel, The Elect Lady. "The Lord of the Promise is the Lord of all true parables and all good fairy tales." Isn't that neat?
Lovely.
And another from his unspoken sermons. "If we will but let our God and Father work his will with us, there can be no limit to his enlargement of our existence." Another delight during my research was meeting some wonderful people to help me along the way. MacDonald's great-great-grandson, Christopher MacDonald, shared family pictures with me for the biography, and dozens of librarians and scholars helped me find information, copies of letters, and rare prints of books. Kirsten Jeffrey Johnson, who has been on Pints with Jack, also helped me reconcile some contradictions I was finding in various biographies of MacDonald. I've made a lot of new friends, and I'm delighted to meet you and share some of this fascinating story.
Well, before we actually talk about the man's life, could you just give us a little bit of context? What was the world that he lived in?
Well, George MacDonald was one of the beloved storytellers of the Victorian era. So he wrote for children and adults to point to the reality beyond what we see in the world. Sometimes he used fairy tales, and other times he used realistic fiction. His most popular fantasies were for children, like The Princess and the Goblin, or At the Back of the North Wind, or The Golden Key. And you may have read some of those in your childhood. There's also dozens of short fairy tales. And what struck me in the research was the meaningful comments he made, often as an aside in the midst of a story. So here are a few. This is from the novel Alec Forbes. "How little they know that what they look for in reality is their God." And here's another from the novel, Ranald Bannerman's Boyhood. "All the troubles come to drive us into that refuge, the secret place of the Most High, where alone we can be safe." G.K. Chesterton wrote of The Princess and the Goblin that "I, for one, can testify to a book that has made a difference to my whole existence, which helped me to see things in a certain way from the start." He also wrote that MacDonald could give the real sense that everyone had the end of an elfin thread that must at last lead them into paradise.
That Chesterton quote is gold. And earlier you mentioned that I might have read some of these MacDonald books in my childhood. I had actually read none. I never knew MacDonald. My wife had read the Curdy books, and I'm in the middle of reading them at the moment for this month. As soon as I read that Chesterton quotation in your book, I knew that we were going to be on firm ground, because Chesterton, his recommendations have never steered me wrong thus far.
Yes, I agree.
So as I refill my teacup, let's do story time.
Okay.
Would you mind just telling us George MacDonald's life story?
Yes. Well, George MacDonald was born in 1824 in Huntly, Scotland, a small town in Aberdeenshire. His mother died when he was only 7 years old, and he was very close to his father, who encouraged him at every stage of his life. His father was a deacon in the Missioner Kirk, a church with a focus on evangelism and missionary endeavors. There is a common misconception that MacDonald hated church as a child. It seems to be derived from attributing the childhoods of some of his characters to himself. However, as the research of Kirsten Jeffrey Johnson has shown, MacDonald's writing and life contradict this idea. His pastor was the Reverend John Hill, who mentored the adolescent George and recruited him to teach in his Sabbath school. George later wrote, "I like to hear a boy loving his minister's preaching. What little I have succeeded in doing in the world, I largely owe to the stimulus given me in boyhood days by my minister, the Reverend John Hill. He was a man of God." One important element in George's young life was his Scottish culture. His great-great-grandfather, William MacDonald, was called the Blind Piper of Portsoy. He had hidden in the coastal caves of Portsoy after the Highlanders lost the Battle of Culloden in 1745. He had a price on his head because he was the piper of his regiment, the one who rallied the men. After the Highlanders were defeated, they lost the privilege of wearing kilts, bearing the claymore and shield, or playing the bagpipes. Though it was 75 years before George was born, the Scots were proud of their battles and expected every new generation to feel the same. This pride in his heritage comes through in many of his novels. His family also visited Portsoy in the summers, and George developed a love for boats and for exploring caves that you will see in many of his books. At 15, he went to King's College in Aberdeen on a scholarship. At this time, higher education was widely available in Scotland, and it was not unusual to see a shepherd reading his Euclid as he tended sheep. However, the same opportunities were not common in England, and before the 19th century ended, higher education in Scotland became harder to attain, a development that George deplored. His family had limited means, so his father sent him a barrel of oats to support him in school. You can think about that when you eat your porridge. George thought he might be a doctor, and his first degree was in chemistry and physics. His later writings reflect his strong belief that science inevitably leads to God. In his unspoken sermons, he wrote, "What idea could we have of God without the sky?" And he refers to revelation about more than water, namely about the God who made oxygen and hydrogen. And here's a quote from What's Mine's Mine, which was C.S. Lewis's favorite realistic novel by MacDonald. "It is when we are most aware of the factitude of things that we are most aware of our need of God, and most able to trust in him. It rouses the soul to the yet more real." Despite his scientific bent, during college, George experienced a spiritual conversion that led him to go to Highbury Theological College to study to be a pastor. His story is an encouragement for those who grow up in a Christian home and must struggle with doubts as they grow older. MacDonald saw doubt as healthy and wrote, "For man may be haunted with doubts and only grow thereby in faith. Doubts are the messengers of the living one to the honest." It's also interesting to learn how he came out of his spiritual struggle in college. He wrote to his father, "One of my greatest difficulties in considering to think of religion was that I thought I should have to give up my beautiful thoughts and my love for the things God had made. But I find that the happiness springing from all things not in themselves sinful is much increased by religion. God is the God of the beautiful, religion the love of the beautiful, and heaven the house of the beautiful. Nature is tenfold brighter in the sun of righteousness, and my love of nature is more intense since I became a Christian." George's letters with his father hold a lot of humor and wisdom. I want to tell a story that was recorded about his father to give you an idea of the kind of person he was. After George grew up and had moved away from home, there was a famine in the Highlands, and rumor went around that the MacDonald brothers were hoarding grain. So one night, a mob went out to the farm and called for George's father. George's father had a timber leg as a result of tuberculosis in his knee from the time he was 24 years old. He had lived most of his adult life with this wooden leg, and every night he would take it off. His new wife had just had a baby, and her health was precarious when the mob arrived. George's father strapped on his leg and asked the mob to meet him at the market square out of deference for his wife's health. So everyone trooped back into town. When George's father got there, he discovered there was a bonfire ready next to the standing stones in the market square, and an effigy of himself ready to go on it. His best weapon was his sense of humor, and he said, "Bide a wee lads, you fastened the timber leg to the wrong hip." And soon he had them laughing and invited them to come back to his barn and see that his meal tub was just as empty as everyone else's. George's father was very close to him and an inspiration to him all his life. I have stories in my book based on his letters to his son, such as the story of the time that young George was pretending to preach from a pulpit made of the dresser in the kitchen. It had a hole cut in it, and he was standing inside the hole, and he got stuck trying to get out of the hole. His father reminded him of this incident as a friendly warning of what not to do when he became a preacher. George dedicated his second book to his father with these words: "To my father, thou hast been faithful to my highest need, and I thy debtor ever, evermore, shall never feel the grateful burden sore. Yet most I thank thee, not for any deed, but for the sense thy living self did breed of fatherhood still at the great world's core."
Okay, I have to interject here because I have to confess the chief thing that I found in reading MacDonald is it makes me realize that I am nowhere near as good a father as I need to be. Particularly in your book, when you focus on that relationship between father and son, it's so close and he loves his dad so much. He makes me feel very inadequate.
Well, he should be an inspiration. Think of how fathers impact their children.
Hopefully that too.
It's wonderful. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, that is great. Well, George became a minister, but only remained in the pastorate for a couple years. And when he left his church in Arundel, he had the idea for teaching humanities with a spiritual viewpoint. And this led to a busy lecture and teaching career, as well as over 30 books, both fiction and nonfiction. He considered his entire career as his pastoral ministry, and he wrote in one of his unspoken sermons entitled Justice, "I believe that to be the disciple of Christ is the end of being, that to persuade men to be his disciples is the end of teaching." And you can see why C.S. Lewis made him the guide in The Great Divorce. Here's another quote from the unspoken sermons: "Christ is the way out and the way in, the way from slavery, conscious or unconscious, into liberty, the way from the unhomeliness of things to the home we desire but do not know." George became professor of English literature at Bedford College in London from 1859 to 1867. It was the first British institution to offer higher education to women. One series of lectures was published as England's Antiphon, and it was a literary history of Christian poetry in the English language. An antiphon is a short response that is sung or spoken in church. George thought these writers were passing on what they had heard from those who came before until a beautiful song was created. He wrote, "When we read rejoicingly the true song speech of one of our singing brethren, we hold song worship with him and with all who have thus at any time shared in his feelings, even if he has passed centuries ago into the high countries of song." It was also important to help Christians understand that they were part of the invisible church throughout history and across the world. So in this book, George wrote, "I want to throw my small pebble at the head of the great Sabbath breaker, schism." He hoped that an understanding of poetry from those who love the Lord would bring unity across denominations. MacDonald was offered pastorates later, but declined them because his lecture and writing career had become his ministry. Interestingly, he continued to volunteer to preach at churches throughout his life and would not accept an honorarium because it was his gift to the Lord. His philosophy of living for the Lord comes out in his writings, And here are a couple quotes. "It is only in him that the soul has room. In knowing him is life and its gladness. The secret of your own heart you can never know, but you can know him who knows its secret." And here's another one. "Never could we have known the heart of the Father, never felt it possible to love him as sons, but for him who cast himself into the gulf that yawned between us." And this is from a letter he wrote in 1866. "In every heart, there is a consciousness of some duty or other required of it that is the will of God. He who would be saved must get up and do that will, if it be but to sweep a room or make an apology or pay a debt." And here's another from his novel, David Elginbrod. "I would rather be what God chose to make me than the most glorious creature that I could think of." Doesn't that remind you of C.S. Lewis?
Yep, it's the great divorce. It's mere Christianity, heavenly and hellish creatures.
Yes, yes.
We're not going to do it in this series, but at one point I am going to have an episode that is purely devoted to reading a line from C.S. Lewis and then reading the corresponding one from MacDonald.
Yes, oh, I would love to hear that. That is a great idea. Well, George married Louisa Powell, and they had 11 children. As I researched their family life, I realized that a large part of their understanding of their calling as a family was to practice hospitality. Many of the early lectures that became courses for the women's college were given in their living room. They hosted parties for the tenants of a missions project, and as a family, they performed their earliest fairy tales for the tenants in the McDonald's backyard. They literally converted one end of George's study into a stage with a curtain and a decorated ceiling so they could host dozens of guests for theatrical performances of Shakespeare and even an adaptation of a Dickens story. When they moved to Bordighera, Italy, they designed their house to have a great room that could seat 250 people. Their son called it the open house of the neighborhood, and they hosted lectures, hymn sings, charades, dinner parties, and nativity tableau. The family supported all this hospitality, and you can see how they would see hospitality as a way of living out their faith. From family letters and activities, it's clear that every member of the family shared this purpose. And in his novel, Sir Gibby, George wrote, "There's no forgetting of ourselves, but in the finding of our deeper, our true self, God's idea of us when he devised us. And that self no man can find for himself, but as many as received him, to them gave he power to become the sons of God." George and his wife Louisa kept a strong faith through many trials, and their children considered this the best corroboration for his books and message. He could write with compassion because he lost his mother and younger brother while he was still a child, and this deepened his understanding of heaven. He also lost two children when they were the ages of 15 and 25, and another daughter at the age of 39. In addition, a young married daughter died at the age of 30, and her only daughter a year later.
When I read your book, I realized that MacDonald and Lewis both lost their mothers at approximately the same age. And I can't help but wonder what kind of binding that must make between them when Lewis discovered that MacDonald had experienced the same heartbreak at about the same time as he had.
Yes, I thought the same thing. And there's a kinship between the two men. As you read more, David, I'm sure you'll think this is an echo. Or maybe it's a pre-echo of what you've loved in Lewis. As an author, I appreciate how MacDonald brings his readers into his stories, and C.S. Lewis does the same. They often see people like themselves who seek adventure but need to grow, whether in their perception of reality or their ideas about faith. And here's an example from Thomas Wingfield Curate, which I highly recommend to your listeners. "Those who gain no experience are those who shirk the king's highway for fear of encountering the duty seated by the roadside." And here's another. The love of our neighbor is the only door out of the dungeon of self.
That was so good. I wanted to interject at so many points, but I really wanted everyone just to hear the story without my ramblings interjecting. The only thing I will say is that if people listening have really enjoyed the quotations that you shared, check out the show notes because we're going to quote them all there as well as their sources. So this might be a way of selecting the first George MacDonald book that you read.
That's great.
So we've mentioned C.S. Lewis throughout, but can you just tell us from your research some more connections between MacDonald and Lewis?
Yes. One of the most significant is the shared perspective these men had on the use of fantasy. C.S. Lewis wrote in Mere Christianity that for me, reason is the natural organ of truth, but imagination is the organ of meaning. And his legacy of reaching the heart through stories was inspired by the works of George MacDonald. Both authors used fairy tales for children to inspire their readers to see a deeper reality. Lewis and MacDonald developed the idea that noble dreams led the heart to understand truth. And in their stories, they illustrated how true nobility comes from the invisible qualities of character, and the truly noble belong to a kingdom that is beyond the physical sight. For both authors, fairy tales were a medium to take the reader beyond the rational mind. As MacDonald reminded us through the words of the great-great-grandmother Irene in The Princess and the Goblin, seeing is not believing, it is only seeing. And here are some quotes that strongly remind me of C.S. Lewis's work. This is from The Unspoken Sermons. He that is made in the image of God must know him or be desolate. And again, here's another quote. A man is in bondage to whatever he cannot part with that is less than himself.
That really reminds me of the great divorce in the preface where Lewis talks about casting away our hellish souvenirs in order to enter heaven.
I agree. And George MacDonald, this is a quote that I wanted to end with today. He said, I believe that there is nothing good for me or for any man but God, and more of God, and that alone through knowing Christ can we come nigh to him. And as an author for children, I hope that his story will inspire another generation of creative minds and help us think of the reality of Christ that exists beyond our earthly vision. So thank you for having me, David.
Oh, not at all. Not at all. Thank you for this. It's been lovely. I'm the nerd as to the best way of starting this MacDonald month. And I think hearing MacDonald in story was the most appropriate way to begin. As we wrap up, let's say someone's picked up a copy of your book, Spiritual Sight, The Story of George MacDonald, and they finish the closing page. What would you say is the next book from or about MacDonald that they should read?
Well, I recommend The Princess and the Goblin to every person, whether they're an adult or a child. And when you read it, you will understand why. And that's where I'd begin.
I think that's a perfect answer. And at least from what I've read thus far, I think I would agree. I started with Fantasties, which is a terrible idea. I don't recommend that's the place to begin to acclimatize yourself to MacDonald. It's the way Lewis did it, but for my brain, it threw me in the deep end. I really liked The Golden Key, and we actually produced an audiobook of The Golden Key for our patron supporters at the end of last season in the promise of this season starting.
Wow.
And that, I think, was also a really gentle introduction, but I think I could be convinced that The Princess and the Goblin is an even better place to begin now that I've actually read it.
Well, I agree. The Golden Key is wonderful, and I teach English at a college, and college students love The Golden Key. So if you're a person who loves fantasy and C.S. Lewis, that's a great place to start.
Mm. And Word on Fire, their children's imprint, they actually just brought out a collection of George MacDonald's children's stories. And that includes The Light Princess and The Golden Key. And I'll make sure there's a link in the show notes to my interview with the person from Word on Fire that I interviewed about that. It's really encouraging to see some forgotten fairy tales being introduced to a new generation.
Yes. And I think fairy tales are important. We know this from C.S. Lewis and from George MacDonald. They give you the right kind of education.
Exactly. Joyce McPherson, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Can you please tell us where people can go to find out more about you and your work?
Yes. Well, I do have a website at joyce-mcpherson.blogspot.com or my Facebook page. So I have an author page on Facebook, and I would love to hear from any of you who love children's biographies. And thank you.
Well, I hear the call for final drinks. So thanks again to our guest. Thanks to our sound engineers, Taylor and Sarah. Thanks to our intern, Julia. To all of you for listening. To all of our patron supporters, particularly our top tier supporters. Mary Margaret, Matt's future wife. Aldo, Alex, James, Matt, Erica, Joelle, Amanda, Thomas, Bud, Shane, Kay, Paul, Gary, Stephen, Kelly, Chris, John, James, Kate, Peter, David, Angela, and Rowdy. We pray for all of our listeners and particularly all of the prayer requests from our Slack channel every time we release an episode. If you've enjoyed this particular episode, please share it on social media, pick up a copy of Joyce's book, and dive into the works of George MacDonald with us this month. And please join us again next time when we'll continue going further up
and further in.
Cheers!
Cheers!